So welcome again to the show for those people who regularly tune in. And then for those of you who maybe have just tuned in for the first time, welcome. We do take callers on the show from 7:30 to 8 o'clock. And as always, it has been the format for many years now. I can't believe how quickly time has gone by. Dr. Raymond Peet will be joining us to share his wisdom. This month, the subject is going to be a little bit political. I can't say it's not, because the subject that we'll be covering will definitely involve politics. And whilst I'm not advocating any one side for the sake of being neutral, there are certain fundamental tenets of freedom of speech, freedom of assembly, that this great nation was founded on in 1777, with the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, Declaration of Independence, etc. That's what our whole country is built on. So there will be a little political, and we invite callers to call in with any questions related or unrelated to some of the topics of the political and physiological side of the topic. So we're going to cover, I think the broad topic is going to be on authoritarianism, and just to couch those terms that authoritarianism would cover, freedom of expression and freedom of religion and freedom of assembly, etc. Those freedoms are not dominated by authoritarianism. And so we're going to bring out both kind of physiological perspective as well as mental and political perspectives. Once again, we're very pleased to have Dr. Raymond Peet with us. And so, Dr. Peet, are you there?
Yes.
Hi. Okay, so thanks so much for joining us on the show. As always, there are people perhaps who have just tuned in now or may listen to this on an audio archive later on the web. Would you just give an outline of your background, your scientific background, and your research?
Relative part of my science background is that I dissented against some of the fundamental ideas in all of the sciences, really, especially in biology. I had a master's degree in humanities from the University of Oregon for several years before I went to study biology, 1968 to 72 for a PhD. But I found that when I followed the college instructor's directions to give the students different perspectives on scientific issues in a course called Physics for Biology Majors, the trustees really didn't want their students to hear the other side of some of the things that were issues then in the 1950s, such as the dangers of fallout from radiation or medical radiation. My whole activity over the years has been looking at descending ideas in all of the sciences.
Okay. So with reference to political ideologies, I know you've mentioned many times from both your run-ins or challenges with various authoritarian figures within the studying community in order to gain your PhD, in order to pass the exams, not to pass the exams for want of not being intelligent enough to write a good enough thesis, but in order to get along. It's just like another kind of club where I've known from my own background that there are those people who perhaps come up with dissenting, for want of a better word, ideas that are challenged, not mainstream, are usually vehemently opposed, and fundamentally threaten those kind of structures that are in place in the ruling ideology of a university, for this instance of explanation. So in terms of authoritarian figures in the academic background, even not just talking about politics and geopolitics, you've been very familiar with those things that have happened that would either be blocking what you would find as new research or old research which was there just needed to be uncovered? And how do you think that manifests itself in academia?
In 1965, I saw a really interesting study by a professor at the Oregon State University, which I never attended. But in this study, she looked at the academic success of graduate students in all the departments, I think, at Oregon State, which it used to be an agricultural college, so it tends to be a more agriculture-oriented rather than humanities as the university in Eugene. But she ranked the scores on Mendel tests. I think it was the graduate or the Miller analogies test. And she looked at the way the brain functions. The Miller analogies measures mental flexibility as well as vocabulary and other aptitudes, but it's heavy on flexibility. They changed the rules partway every 10 questions or so. They used different kinds of analogy. And she found that from the lowest academic achievers in graduate school, the lowest scores on that test corresponded nicely. And up to the middle range of the Miller analogies test, that increased in rank with the academic success up to the straight A, 4-point students. But then as the students' mental scores on that analogies test increased, their grades decreased. And again, the very highest on the mental abilities were lower, very unsuccessful graduate students. That obviously is a matter of authoritarian fitting in, being other-directed rather than being powered by curiosity and desire for knowledge, which really didn't fit in and made them fail.
Okay. So I think probably just to get into some of the politics, and let's just go for the jugular and go for some of that, go for some of the politics in science, in academia, and then the politics within the framework which those establishments are raised or fostered. I think in the past, certainly up until or probably the end of the Second World War, and I know I've brought this out with you several times about the German repatriation that was demanded after the fall of the Third Reich, and how the corporate assets within Germany were seized, as well as some of the mind capability, the intellectual capability of the either the physicists or the chemists, pharmacologists, etc., that were working for these big institutions was seized and brought to America. How the background of the New World Order was founded, and Nuremberg trials, and how that whole thing basically virtually acquitted a lot of these people, given that they would then work for the United States in their newly seized businesses with newly seized information, and how this New World Order concept is very much being exposed today on the internet. And we're even beginning to see the emergence of news channels like Fox actually openly debating now concepts that Donald Trump's been bringing out in his various rallies. He's definitely not bought out, and he's definitely not a politician. I hear a lot of the ideologies that he has would seem to harken back to a minimal government, the way the Constitution was written, more decision-making by the state, less government involvement, make better deals, et cetera, et cetera. The kind of rhetoric I know I've heard from him. And then we have the counterpart to that in the campaign, Hillary Clinton, who definitely has, if you want to go look for it, been implicated with many different, in parentheses, crimes for which they're calling for her indictment, whether it's Benghazi or whether it's the email server that got hacked or whether it's the funding that she's gotten from dictators and other countries, and maybe not dictatorial countries, but definitely nations that are certainly opposed to America's ideology. Where this brings our country, and in terms of the mindset in academia, the mindset in succeeding in academia, because the dogma that's established and is not challenged, that's set up by pharmaceutical companies that have a lot of money, a lot of government lobbying power, and how this whole thing really is opposed to free will and freedom of expression and a constitutionally sound republic that the republic was built on. And
free trade, as opposed to free trade.
Yeah, I mean, there's both the TPP and other policies that have been brought up and documentation that's been brought up, and certainly not an American-owned or controlled framework too. So I think the whole concept of other powers being in control all kind of rolls into the geopolitical space that we're in at the moment with this this kind of out of left field comes Donald Trump with his rhetoric, and the old kind of fabric of control and two-party monopoly. This both Republican and Democrats are both seem to be very much on the same kind of side of the fence, and they're all definitely much against Donald Trump for whatever it is that he's standing for. And I know I've seen him being accused of being fascist is definitely one of the words, and that's why I wanted to bring out the politics side of this hour talk with you, Dr. Pete, because I know you've come from a background in academia of being very much aware of the dominant authoritarian background who doesn't want to accept your new uncovering of old research that proves otherwise,
as well as new
research that's coming out at that time. So in terms of that kind of struggle between academia, getting along in society, being free enough to have the expression to do that, and new ideas and novel concepts come into market because of a free market. And basically, the whole point is that we're not able or not, we shouldn't be allowed, and we're not allowed to offend by killing or defaming someone to verbal kind of abuse and physical abuse, but that free markets let good ideas come to pass because they give the people the choice to either support it or not.
Well, it's like the fascist hospitals too. I mean, I was threatened to be thrown out on the streets when I needed care in the hospital because I wouldn't go along with one of their procedures. I mean, that's fascism.
The ruling class really has defined the words, though, and Mussolini clearly defined what he called fascism as the blending of state power with corporate power. That's exactly
what's going on here, right?
Is now being called free trade.
Uh-huh.
And the trade deals, which are essentially allowing the biggest corporations to impose their political standards on the rest of the world in an empire. So free trade is really subjecting political rules in other countries to the international corporations' benefit. The environment in Mexico, for example, has been deteriorating for several decades with the Maquiladora industry along the border, but then the NAFTA started because corn can be grown industrially on a huge scale in the United States. The subsidized corn has to be freely admitted into Mexico, where people using subsistence methods depended for their livelihood on growing their own corn and animals. And so this subsidized cheap corn displaced farmers and created the influx of immigrants who are wanted for cheap labor in the farms and probably eventually, if there are any factories left, they would be doing Macaladora-type work in the U.S.
Okay, let me just get the number out for people that may have just tuned. You're listening to Ask Your Rabbi, Dr. KMED Galbaville, 91.1 FM. From 7:30 till the end of the show, you're invited to call in with any questions related or unrelated to this month's kind of mixed topic of politics, authoritarianism, free speech, constitutional rights, alternatives. And obviously, we're coming from an alternative medicine background. And Dr. Pete, our guest, PhD endocrinologist, who's been studying and researching many different aspects of longevity, as well as hormones, etc., that we've normally talk about. He's very graciously joined us. I know you weren't feeling too well earlier, Dr. Pete, so I was a little wondered whether or not we'd be doing this, but I appreciate your time coming here. You mentioned Mussolini. That's quite interesting, actually, because when I looked earlier, and I hadn't even spoken to you all day here, I looked at the what I wanted to do was break down the different political ideologies and see the statements that these political ideologies flew their banner over in order to get a concept of each political mindset. And then I think that would probably be a good place to go. We have a caller in now who's just decided to call, but we can take this caller and then let's move on to the kind of individual political topic, banners that each party flies under, and let's explore the authoritarian, stance, amongst that. Okay, caller, you're on the air. Where are you from? And what's your question?
Hi. I'd rather not say where I'm from, but anyway, I'm in the area.
Okay.
Let's see. Two things. One thing that's been bothering me is we really don't have a good vocabulary that, a word. I mean, we like to use the word fascism for lack of a better word, but it might not be precisely accurate. You know, we need a word that describes, this is something people can think about, that combines the capitalism with the police state covert operation situation that we have with our media and the government and everything. So it's, I think would really help talking about it is if we had some words, we need to create them somehow, combining, you know, the language we have. Because when you say the corporate media to somebody who doesn't know the field really well, they have no idea what you're talking about. Yeah. And so what's really needed is a word that, you know, sort of self-explanatory.
Right.
And the other thing I want to talk about briefly.
Yeah.
And I hate to change the subject to health, but this is usually a health show.
It sure is.
I was wondering.
It sure is.
Yeah, but see, government is affecting our health. That's why we have to talk about
definitely.
It.
Oh, tell me about it. It's just ridiculous.
I mean, if it's just on a stress level.
Over my house recently to tell me that I don't have legal electricity in my mobile. That just happened like in the last month. This drunk shows up telling me that the police are telling her to tell me that I don't have legal electricity. So yeah, that's what the politics are like in the little town I'm living in. But anyway,
what was the second question?
Back to health.
Yeah.
I was just wondering, and if it's not really relevant, you don't want to talk about it, I'll call back some other time. But I was wondering about how do you like sort of re-inoculate your stomach? Like it seems like I've had problems maybe from sulfites that killed off, like maybe some of the enzymes that helped me digest vegetables and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm wondering if you guys have any suggestions how I can sort of reestablish those living organisms that I think made digestion easier when I was younger.
Okay.
I was thinking maybe like because I know with dairy products, it seems like if I eat a lot of cheese and I eat a lot of yogurt, then I can drink milk, whereas if I haven't eaten cheese and yogurt in a while, I have a lot of problems digesting milk. And so I was thinking that might be the same situation with vegetables. And you might have some ideas. Maybe would fermented vegetables help or something? Do you have any ideas on that? And
if
you don't want to talk about it tonight, then I'll call you back some other time.
No problem.
No, that's fine. We announced questions related or unrelated to tonight's topic. So feel
right.
welcome
well,
to call in about health questions
because
that's really the most interesting to us anyways.
Thanks
okay, so
I'm going to get off the line.
No problem. I'll give the recolonization answer to you, Dr. P, and then I'll cover the fascism because that's actually can be the beginning of the explanation of the different party mindsets, and we can explore the authoritarian system
okay.
over that.
I think he mentioned sulfite as a problem.
Yeah, he thought that the sulfites might have killed off some good bacteria, and I do know from being friends with a winemaker that sulfites are a preservative and they are antimicrobial and they are like a bleaching product.
Yeah, and I think they might also help to initiate allergies that would maybe be interactive with the microbes that are also being damaged by the sulfites. The sulfites are reductants. And the stress state is an exaggeratedly reduced state. And things that promote good oxidative metabolism can help the intestine greatly, keeping your thyroid in good condition.
And sulfites are anti-thyroid too, right?
Yeah. And the slightly antiseptic foods, such as cooked mushrooms, bamboo shoots, raw carrots and saturated fats, these help to keep down the potentially toxic bacteria.
Yeah, and saturated fats are, like coconut oil, is antimicrobial.
Yeah, and just keeping the digestive system stimulated and very active so that you tend to digest the germs rather than being digested by them.
Yeah, so...
Okay.
Keeping your bowel movements frequent.
Okay.
And also, just another thing, the one probiotic that I found quite useful for me personally was Dr. Ron's UltraPure probiotic. And that was one I didn't have adverse reactions to. And I have had adverse reactions to a lot of the probiotics sold over the counter. So that one is over the counter too. You can find it online, Dr. Ron's probiotics. And yeah, the man mentioned that he was feeling better digesting milk when he had been eating cheese and yogurt, and you do get a lot of natural probiotics from eating cultured dairy.
Okay, so we have another caller, so let's take this other caller before we move on to the politics. Caller, you're on the air. Where are you from?
I'm local, Garberville.
Okay.
And I have the word that the gentleman previously was searching for.
Which, the fascism?
No, it's a
not
term
fascism.
That is used by the United States State Department, and it's called Americanism.
Americanism.
Americanization. We're trying to Americanize Vietnam. We were going to Americanize other countries in South America. We were going to Americanize the Middle East. Americanization. That's what we do.
Uh-huh.
We know what we're doing when we're doing it. It's an empire thing.
Well,
and we do it. Thank you.
I wonder if he was old enough to remember when we had the Un-American Activities Committee practically running the country.
I was born in 1957, and I believe that's around the time that was very active.
Yeah, in 1960, the 60s sort of began when students had a protest in Washington against HUAC, House Un-American Activities Committee, and they were really the most un-American part of society, trying to suppress all free thought.
Absolutely. And, well, we're all kind of like singing the song to the choir here, in a way.
I know.
But, you know, it's locally, our Northern California people are a little bit ahead of the curve of understanding these issues than the rest of the country. And thank you for the show, because I know a lot of people from all over the country are listening. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you for your call. Now, the West Coast is definitely, I'm very, very pleased, very proud to be an American. I'm on the West Coast. I'm in California and where it all started. And I'm sure there's going to be many more good things to come out of it, as long as we don't let political correctness take us over, because I think that's becoming a really bad problem. That can also be talked about. We're on the air now. Ask Your Herb Doctor, KMUD Galveston 91.1 FM, from now until the end of the show at 8 o'clock. You can call in if you're on the web. You want a toll-free number, 800-568-3723, or for those of our listeners in the area, toll-free, the 707 number is 923-2513. Okay, so...
Or 3911, 923-3911.
Beg your pardon. Okay, 3911. There you go.
I have another little comment.
Go ahead.
On the question of language and what you call it. I did my thesis on William Blake, and in the late 1700s, he was tried for sedition in 1804, but he was writing things that were potentially disturbing to the ruling class all through the late 1700s. And what he was doing was showing the way language was used to deceive the people. And he would reverse, use heaven and hell in opposite senses, and to show how radically the establishment was misusing language to impose its own ideas on the people. And the current public relations psychology people working for political control, it has developed all during the 20th century, but they're doing exactly the opposite. They're doing studies to find which words are most manipulative, which mislead the people most effectively. And the categories of right-wing, left-wing, conservative, and so on are being manipulated deliberately.
Okay, good. We do have another caller, so let's get this caller taken. We'll see where we go with this next question. Caller, where are you from?
Yes, hello.
Hi.
I hear a lot about political correctness, and I'm not sure what that means. What is political correctness?
Okay, as the way I understand political correctness, it's basically not having your own thoughts, not saying what you feel for fear of upsetting somebody. It's basically the opposite of freedom of speech. I think political correctness is essentially a tyranny, and we can get into that too, because in England...
Well, it's so vague. I mean, I can understand, you know, not saying racial slurs. That doesn't sound very, you know, socially correct. I don't know about politically, but what cannot be said,
well,
you know, politically?
It's about the ruling class that are ruling that nation or that state and their ideologies and what does or doesn't agree with their political agenda on whether or not they're going to get voted back in next time by you or me. So whatever the political correctness is usually what the political ideals are, and not to go against them. That's very much a suppression of freedom of speech.
Well, I know Donald Trump loves to talk about he can't stand political correctness, but he says horribly slanderous things. He says completely opposite things. He's always changing his mind.
Well, you know, as far as I remember, that's nothing actually stopping that from happening. America has a freedom of expression mandate in its first amendment. So there isn't actually anything wrong with that. I think the only thing that the United States actually
you think there's
guards
nothing
against.
Wrong with him lying?
Oh, lying, you know,
his mind all the time and insulting huge amounts of people.
That's very much down to the person who thinks that they have the truth and the person who feels they're being insulted. But what is very much frowned upon, or in fact prohibited, is actually physically harming someone. You can take your placard into the Garberville Town Center, for example, and you can start protesting whatever you want. That's freedom of speech, and as long as you're not hurting anybody, you can say what you want, too. I think in terms
Donald
of...
Trump is actually advocating beating people up. I heard him say it myself. I saw a lot of it on television. I saw a lot of the things that he said. And he said some pretty outrageous things and some very contradictory things.
The media are amplifying the things he says and ignoring similar things that Hillary Clinton does. She's a big name caller, except she is more politically correct in the way she does it. She does it to promote the possibility of war and expansion of empire.
I haven't heard her say anything that sounds like that.
She is called. She called Putin a Hitler. Said similar things about North Korea and China.
Well, Putin doesn't allow homosexuality in his country. I mean, that's pretty rigid. You know, that's pretty intense. But Trump, you know, he talks about, you know, not letting any Muslims in.
He
you
said
know,
until
how
they're
about
properly...
we don't let any white people in?
Yeah.
What about white American terrorists?
The Muslim reference was to being vetted before they come here. Like anybody entering the United States should be going through regular due
like
process.
You like Donald Trump.
Say again?
You sound like you like Donald Trump.
Yeah, I do like some of his policies, actually. I think from a free-thinking perspective of being in business and generating income for the least amount of money, I think he could do great things for this country in terms of saving us money.
He says that he's going to bring back all the jobs from overseas and make all these companies bring the jobs back to America.
Doesn't that sound good?
And yet he himself has companies in China. So isn't that a bit hypocritical?
Well, maybe his will be the first to come back to the U.S.
Well, how can he demand that other people bring their...
I know. We can't digress too far here.
Well, I'm just saying that the bottom line for a businessman is making a buck. And I don't think that he's going to bring back all his jobs from China so that he can pay people enormously larger wages. And make a lot less money for, you know, for his pocketbook.
Well, we're actually talking about the discussion here in the world of politics of authoritarianism versus the Constitution and the especially the First Amendment, the freedom of speech and freedom of expression, etc., freedom to congregate and have free speech. So it's
That's
a little,
what we're doing now. We're having free speech.
Well, I think that he has the right to say whatever he wants, but I'm saying what he does say is very contradictory,
you know what?
Very
inflammatory.
You know,
well, they
you
know all
what?
Do.
In a free market, like anything else, in a free market, if you and I think the product's a good product, we're going to support it with our dollars. And so if he does get in, there'll be more people supporting him for what he is portraying than whoever is the other opposition. So it's a free society where we have this free expression and we can say what we want, like just like you're saying about Trump having business in overseas, and that's actually a hypocritical statement. I can't validate what you're saying because I don't see the evidence in front of me, but I guess we can all take a look. But it's basically the free speech that allows all of the voices to be heard, and then everybody can make a joint agreement.
But because we do have freedom, you know, businessmen have freedom to go overseas and have other people make their products much more.
I think a lot of it actually is that these businesses have been forced out of the. Most of these businesses have been forced out of the United States by the current political strategies. Basically, if you look at the real reason why all these corporations are moving overseas, is because the climate in this country has been made so bad for them, because there's so many inside deals going on that are being making money for these corporations, that is the real problem. It's not that they won't pay them enough or they think it's just better. I think if you look at the real facts of it.
Well, I think they feel it's better if you can pay somebody 35 cents a day than $100 a day.
Oh, well, you don't have to pay somebody $100. That's a kind of exaggeration, but and they pay someone 30 cents in a sweatshop in China is definitely not moral. I totally agree with that. I think what's more appropriate is that Americans here have work. They feel good about themselves contributing to the economy, contributing to their society, being an asset to their country, being in the asset column of America is what it should be all about. And however jobs are brought back here to give people dignity and to give people something to do.
But that's a fantasy. There's no way to actually
I don't think it's a fantasy at all. I think that's what we've been sold out. And I think that's what our politicians have sold us out on. And that's why the jobs have gone to China.
But even the jobs that we have here, they won't even let minimum wage be a living wage.
Yeah.
And that goes on right here in our country, not someplace in Malaysia or China. Things are worse for poor people here than they've ever been.
Yeah, and they've gotten worse.
And they've gotten worse, in the last 50 years.
Because of the big companies and billionaires and business people and corporations.
Right.
Corporations don't pay any taxes.
Yeah,
even
well,
Donald Trump says he'd rather pay as little taxes as possible.
Well, we're not opposed to that. That's not what we're saying. But I think the scope of what you're talking about is probably going to take us too far down the road and not allow other callers
Let other callers speak.
Okay. All right.
Some of those points were sounding like a support for Bernie Sanders, which I think his domestic policies are very traditional and actually conservative in one sense of the concept, conserving the standard of living, quality of life of working people, and so on.
Okay, I think we have one or two more callers on the air. Do we have? Yeah, let's take this next caller. Caller, where are you from, and what's your question?
Hi, I'm from the San Francisco Bay Area.
Okay, hi. What's your question?
I have a couple of health-related questions for Dr. Pete because I've been experiencing really incredible results with my thyroid medication.
Okay, good.
So quick background, I'm a client of Dr. Murray's. Hi, Dr. Murray.
Hi.
And he prescribed thyroid medication to me recently, so I've been on it for 1 week so far. And my two questions are regarding some incredible results that I've experienced over this past week. So the first one is specifically about my lips. I've noticed my lips are getting bigger. Shockingly, my skin cells on my upper lip, they're turning into lip skin cells, is the easiest way to put it. The color in these areas are turning pink, and the pores in these areas are shrinking to where you can't even see them, and it looks like smooth lips. The color hasn't fully gotten in there all the way, but I can tell that the skin is completely changing. And so my question is, Dr. Pete, how is that physiologically happening? I'm just blown away.
The circulation increases as the metabolic rate is increased under the influence of thyroid. Cells start producing carbon dioxide, which opens up blood vessels, and it also accelerates the all of the normalizing processes, creating replacement cells, for example, rather than scar tissue. With aging, there's a tendency to fill in with fibrotic, useless scar-like connective tissue in between where replacement stem cells haven't been able to develop. And a good supply of energy and oxygen can renew tissues. My own experience when I was experimenting with, among other things, DHEA and progesterone, but also thyroid, I found that in my 40s, I grew more than an inch while losing some belly fat, staying the same weight, but my muscles developed as the fat disappeared. And even at that age, my bones were elongating. So the repair and regeneration and anti-aging effects of thyroid used to be talked about in the 1920s and 30s, but since the pharmaceutical industry started suppressing the idea of treating hypothyroidism with thyroid supplements, since then attention has been strongly directed away from those restorative effects of thyroid.
Wow, that is so neat. And my last question is, I've noticed that the very noticeable green veins in my legs, lower legs and upper legs, it's embarrassing that you can see them. I'm in my late 20s, but they're becoming less apparent as if they're going deeper into my legs. And so I'm wondering what is physiologically happening to the, you know, that's causing that.
Many things, but high estrogen tends to be the both high cortisol and high estrogen make up for the metabolic deficiency in hypothyroidism. And there are several skin blood vessel things that you see with high estrogen and high cortisol, little red dots of broken capillaries or just nests of overdeveloped capillaries and small arterioles are producing red spots of different sizes and shapes. And sometimes the big bluish things called vascular spiders and then varicose veins at a very low energy state. Estrogen tends to weaken the basic muscle tone in the veins, and progesterone and thyroid restore the muscle tone so that the valves are on the walls of the big veins, and if the vein relaxes, the valves don't work as valves because the flaps can't reach each other. And so if you just contract the veins under the influence of progesterone and thyroid, the valve will begin working and restore the function of the vein. Then the tissues are better oxygenated, so the hormones, vascular endothelial growth factor, for example, VEGF, is produced under the influence of high estrogen and stress and inflammatory mediators, and it tends to be very much lower under the influence of thyroid. So you don't need those extra abnormal blood vessels when your thyroid is functioning well. But when you are taking a certain dose of thyroid, the thyroxine accumulates in your tissues with a half-life of 2 weeks. So you have to watch. People will usually feel great as they increase their dose some point in the first week or two. But if you're taking more than you need, you will reach a point where you find that you're taking more than enough. You'll get out of breath and your heart will pound or something. But then when it accumulates and levels off, then your body goes through further adjustments. So you have to keep watching over a period of a few months. And then you have to watch for seasonal effects because you don't need as much thyroid in the summer as you do in the winter.
Wow, that's interesting. That makes sense that Dr. Murray just recently asked me to submit more readings, so I just did that. But, well, thank you so much, Dr. Pete. And, you know, I just want you to know you've absolutely changed my life and you're my hero. I mean, it's incredible what I'm experiencing. I just thank you for being brave enough to share your research and what you found with the world.
Thank you for your call. Dr. Pete, I wanted to just go back to what it was you had mentioned off the cuff here about Mussolini. And that I was looking today, and I haven't spoken to you all day, and I definitely haven't arranged this. But in 1933, when Hitler was Chancellor of Germany, I saw that he was actually, if you type in fascism, I think you come up with two names that come up more than anything else, Mussolini and Hitler. And ultimately, Hitler, in I think it was February 28th, 1933, whether it was done by the fascists or whether it was done by the communists, they stated it was a communist crime, that the Reichstag's building, which was basically the Houses of Parliament type comparable in Germany, was burnt down. Well, the very next day, this edict was announced that basically prevented any political uprising. It was ultimately exactly the same thing that's been bandied about here in America. If we get any big terrorist attack, that the president will announce a state of emergency, a suspension of the Constitution, and basically be able to do anything he wants, which is pretty scary, no matter who it is. I'm not really taking sides here. There's things I like about Trump. There's things I don't like about Trump. There's things I definitely don't like about Hillary. And there's things I don't like about the Bushes. And if it's for me, I'm a libertarian more than anything. But getting back to suspending the Constitution and what happened in Germany in 1933, that ultimately gave Hitler the power to come, well, the death, of course, of Heidelberg, who was the VP then, or the president at that point in time. His death ultimately allowed Hitler to succeed and led through various, within that year, 1933, Jews were basically persecuted, book burning was going on, the rise of Nazism was just going rampant, because they suppressed the ability of anybody else to argue against it. And that was the most important thing that caught my attention, was that freedom of speech is very, very important. And that's why our First Amendment is so, so important to us. And we have to protect it with our lives if necessary, because founding fathers weren't stupid people. They'd escaped the country that I was born in, that I've seen going down the toilet in the last 15 years since I've been here. And things that are happening in England now, you would not believe. And I'm not I'm not racist. I think freedom of religion's just fine, you know. But I think when you come to America, you're supposed to integrate with America. And when I came here, you know, I take on American, I drive on the side of the road the Americans drive on. I, you know, kind of follow the laws of the land and, you know, obey what's, you know, the law of the land, what everybody else does. And so fitting in is the most important thing. And it's great. You know, people from all over the world want to come to America and come here because of the values and, you know, the history and everything else. And they feel like they have a chance to succeed. So you do that and you come here and you assimilate. But, basically in 33, when Hitler took over, the freedom of expression was completely expunged and you were not allowed to argue it. And that from 33 to 39 led to the Second World War with the invasion of Poland. So talking about fascism, you know, it's basically the form of government then, which the country is considered more important than anyone or any one person. And so that very much brings its a leading to totalitarianism and authoritarianism, which doesn't allow you or I the freedom of expression to argue against it. So, Dr. Pete, do you have anything else to say about fascism? And I know we've got lots of other different political terms like socialism, like liberalism, conservatism. They all have different ideals and tenets. But in terms of fascism, for what it is, as an authoritarian, dictatorial type stance, definitely not what we want to be under.
You were mentioning the import of the German scientists after the war, mm-hmm. Project Paperclip, and a similar thing happened with the failure of the Hungarian uprising in 1956, and these fascists. These physicists who were imported had a very great inclination towards Nazism and fascism because John Foster and Alan Dulles were working closely with Prescott Bush, the father of George Herbert Walker Bush, in supporting Hitler in the 1920s and 30s. And the Dulleses not only wanted to bring in all of the the scientists who they needed, for example, for their rocket science and weapons development and such, but they imported or continued their support for the role that Hitler had played in the world. A recent book by an Australian history professor has followed the role of the Dulles brothers in world history. The effects continue right down to the present, but this recent book shows how the Dulleses and European fascists' involvement in Indonesia was a very important factor in Kennedy's assassination, mm-hmm. because Kennedy was within just a few weeks of changing policy in Indonesia, which would have ruined some of the investments that the Dulleses were involved in. And George De Morel Schultz, I think his name was, the guy who was closely connected to Lee Harvey Oswald, who was one of Dulles's associates way back in the 1940s period.
Okay, well, we've just got another caller that's just come in, so let's take this next caller. Call away from, and what's your question?
I'm local, and my question, I really wanted to just add a fragment of information. During the late 40s, when, you know, the doctor was talking about them importing through various means German scientists, we got the Galen Group, which was upper echelon SS, created false identities for them.
Sure.
And that was the work of Wild Bill Donovan, who was the director of the Secret Service.
Mm-hmm.
But at that same time, 46, 47, they also created the CIA.
Right.
They were fascinated by the incredibly cold and calculated methodology of the genocide that they were creating. And the development of the weapons and things, they didn't understand and wanted that information to be able to create, you know, of course, intelligence, if you want to call it that, you know, forces that we have out there today. You know, so they created false identities, and we got people that created the gas chamber. Mm-hmm. And these people were considered assets. It's just an ongoing thing.
Yeah. Okay. Well, listen, I appreciate your call, but we have only 5 minutes. So let me just wrap up here with Dr. Pete and thank everyone that's called in. Dr. Pete, thank you so much for your time. I do appreciate you joining us. And
was there anything else you wanted to add to the show, Dr. Pete, before we finish? Because it's 5 minutes, so we do have a little bit of time.
The doctrine of eugenics actually went from the United States and England to Germany, and Hitler put it into practice, but it never left American biology.
Right.
The Institute for Social...
He was used to implement it, basically, for the Americans.
Americans have continued citing the work which was done scientifically to justify killing Jews and Slavs and black people and anyone that Hitler considered politically inappropriate.
Yeah.
These pseudo-scientific studies were essentially designed by Konrad Lorenz, who got a Nobel Prize, and our American geneticists have sort of worshipped these ideas of genetic determinism, including determinism even of political beliefs.
Okay, well, let's leave it with that, and I'll.
That's all I can say is wow.
Okay, well, thank you so much for your time, Dr. Pete.
Okay, thanks.
Okay, so for those people who've tuned in, Dr. Raymond Pete, raypete.com, his website's full of articles. They are all about pretty much physiological health articles. He's not a particularly political person, but I know he's got a background in academia that has certainly seen him come up against some professors who were very dogmatic in their belief and not able to see new ideas, just called too radical. But we're seeing all of that come to pass now, and 30, 40 years later, we're seeing the main importance here of saturated fats, as Dr. Pete's gone on for a long time about. We're seeing the importance of sugar. We're seeing the necessity of salt. All of these things have been previously plagued and dogmatized and even banned in some places, but I see these things coming around. So,
yeah, recently at a coffee shop, I was told that I might be charged extra if I wanted to put that many packets of sugar in my cup of coffee.
Anyway,
so it is coming, folks.
Anyway,
beware. So you will be charged extra for sugar.
For those of you who are still listening, the main point of all of this, I think, is that I really wanted just to bring out this part of our Constitution here, okay, that really encapsulates all of it. And, you know, we're all very flawed human beings. You know, we have emotions. Some people lose their temper easily. Some people are very calm. Some people are honest. Some are dishonest, etc. You know, we're a mixed bag of tricks. But the part of the Constitution that resonates with me most is the the concept here of this self-evident truth, you know, that Martin Luther King talked about in his famous speech, Liberation, before he was assassinated. That the part of the Constitution that mentions that all men are created equal, that they're endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, that to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed. So we live in a constitution, and the main thing is we've got to be fair. We've got to be, you know, we've got to be open to ideas, discussions. We have to talk about it. We don't want authoritarianism. It's good to have free speech. Don't let your First Amendment rights get suppressed. Don't let the government get tyrannical. This is a free speech radio station, and so thank you for this station, and thank you for those listening.
Yeah, thank you for listening. Good night.
Good night.